Okay, good evening. Welcome to the first of our series on Hilchas Muktzah. Hilchas Muktzah is unquestionably something that's very difficult, very complex, a lot of details, and it helps if you have general rules so that you could know how to apply details. And we'll get to those generalities before we get to specifics. One thing, let's just start off with a big kula, because we all like kulas. And we'll have chumras as we go, don't worry, I'm sure we'll get a good chumra today also. But we'll start with a very big kula. So let's start with before we get to the kula, question. Am I allowed to touch a laptop on Shabbos? So you learned muktzah already. What? Halacha l'maisa, can I touch my laptop on Shabbos? My iPad too. What? Yes? No? What? You can't move it. So I didn't ask you if I can. I asked if I could touch it. So halacha is you are permitted, mutter lichatchila, to touch muktzah on Shabbos. Muktzah is asur betiltil, to handle, to move. It is not asur to touch. Therefore, could you sit on a car on Shabbos? You know, you're sort of schmoozing with your friends, you're leaning against the car, so I guess it depends how heavy you are and how big a car it is. And are you sitting on it? Are you leaning against it? But if the car will move, it's usr. If the car will stay still, it's completely fine. Cars are muktzah, that's right. That means you can't lift it up and carry it with you. It does not mean that you can't touch it, lean on it, etc. Fine, now that we start with the kula, we could get to hilchas muktzah. First of all, why is there an isr of muktzah? Well, muktzah is midah what? Midrabbana, you're 80% correct. There are a few cases that there might be a situation, muktzah daraisa, perhaps on yontif there could be such a situation, but we're not going to be talking about that practically at all. We might mention it in passing in a few weeks, but for operative purposes, let's assume muktzah is midrabbana. What time period, historically, do you think were the gzeras of muktzah? I'll give you three options. The time of Nach, the time of the Mishnayos, or the time of the Gemara? You say Mishnah. That's pretty early. What? Nah. That's very, really? What? The answer is Nehemiah. Nehemiah, Ubeis Dino. In the time of Nehemiah, there was laxity, as Psukim, explicit Psukim in Nehemiah tell us, that Bnei Yisrael were not careful in Hilchas Shabbos. Not in Muktzah. There was no Hilchas Muktzah. They weren't careful in Hilchas Shabbos. And because of that, Nehemiah came around and said, you're not allowed to move anything. Anything. Nothing at all. Absolutely nothing. With three exceptions. Like the spoon and fork that you eat with. That was one exception. Two other exceptions I don't recall. As Shmiras Shabbos became a little more proper, so Nehemiah, the Batei Din, I don't know, it was Nehemiah's generation, or the following generation, said, we'll allow you a little more, a little more, a little more. What we're left with that, after all those new heterim leniencies, we're left with the halachas of muktzah as we know it now. In other words, originally everything was mutter. Nehemiah came and said absolutely everything is usher to move, everything. Everything. Except maybe clothing and eating utensils. More and more and more lenient until we get to whatever is left being mutter now and being usher now, that's what's left after Nehemiah came around. But we're not going to talk about Nehemiah. Let's talk about why Chachamim wanted to create this Isser Muktzah. Let me rephrase that. If Nehemiah sees that there is weakness in our Shmiras Shabbos, come John, there's plenty of room up here. If there's weakness in our Shmiras Shabbos, so why don't they say we should all learn Hilchas Shabbos? Why don't they say we should all, I don't know, we should all, what else could we do to improve our Hilchas Shabbos? We should all not speak. That's much better. Say we shouldn't speak. And okay, after a few generations of people not speaking on Shabbos, then, you know, they'll let us talk a little bit, you know, a little more. Why do they say you can't move things? So here we have a number of reasons for the Isser of Muktzah. Believe it or not, the Gemara says one thing, and the Rambam gives three answers, but doesn't give the answer that the Gemara itself gives. The Gemara says, in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Chav Dalet 124, Gemara Shabbos, says, or assumes, that muktzah is a precaution not to go outside of an Erev. Tiltul Mukta was made Asr so that we don't come to violate Hotza'ah, carrying without an Erev. Now, I understand I can't eat chicken with milk because I might come to eat meat with milk. I understand that I can't play a violin lest I am attacking, fix a violin. How is it that I can't handle items with my hands lest I go outside? It's not a one step removed. It's like I'm handling it, I could handle it inside this room all day long. What does that have to do with going outside an Erev? This whole area has an Erev around it. I think the idea that Chachamim were thinking is they wanted us to be aware of things in our hands. So they came around and made up this newfangled idea saying some things just you can't have in your hands. What is that going to make me do? Be aware of things that are in my hands. When I'm aware of it, for this newfangled Hilchos Mukta that they just created, I'll also be aware of what's in my hands in terms of when I walk outside of an Erev. So that's the first reason why there's an Isser called Mukta. That reason is so that I don't come to do Hotza'ah. The Rambam gives three other reasons why we should have the halachas of Mukta. The Rambam says that we know from Pesukim and Nach that Shabbos is supposed to be a different day than the rest of the week. We learn it from the Pasuk in, help me, Malachi? Daber Davar, Ritzo Cheftzecha, V'daber Davar. I don't know, where is that Pasuk? Yeshaya? Okay. Pasuk says you're not allowed to talk on Shabbos the way you speak on Chol. The Pasuk says you're not allowed to walk on Shabbos the way you walk during the Chol. The Pasuk says you're not allowed to do business on Shabbos the way you do business on Chol, because business is only Durabanan. Says the Rambam, certainly you shouldn't be carrying things on Shabbos the way you carry things on Chol. What do I mean, says the Rambam? Imagine a Shabbos that you are sitting in your living room with a long afternoon or a long Friday night now, and you're bored. So what are you going to do? You're going to just start moving your whole house around. Redoing all your furniture. On a long Shabbos afternoon during the spring, you could just go outside and move all those rocks outside of your garden. You could rake up all your leaves because, hey, you want to go to the ball game on Sunday and Friday, you're getting ready. So Shabbos afternoon is a great time to rake up the leaves. So you will not end up being, as the Torah wants us to do, L'ma'an Yanuach. The time of Shabbos is L'ma'an Yanuach. And if we are going to end up spending our Shabbosim doing work but not malacha, running around doing things with our carrying things, moving things around, we will end up not resting the way Shabbos wants us to rest. And therefore, Chazal figured a way to make sure that we will rest is by not handling certain things. The Rambam says another reason. Reason number three so far for tonight is a little bit unique. The Rambam says, let's look around at our population. We have people who go to work. There are a lot of people who don't go to work. We have retirees. We have students. Okay, they write a little bit. Essentially, they're studying. We have kids who don't go to work. We have what's called the leisure population. 10, 20, 30, maybe even 40% of the population don't go to work. We have let's assume a 30% leisure population. Well, for that leisure population that don't go to work, how is Shabbos different than any other day of the week? They don't take the train. Well, they don't take the train on Tuesdays either. They're not doing business. They don't do business on Tuesdays either. They're not lighting fires. They never light fires. They're not writing. They never write. They're not sewing. They never sew. They're not cooking. They have maids or mothers who cook for them. So the Rambam says, we want Shabbos to be recognizable even for this leisure class. Even for this group of people that don't do anything, we want them to have a Shabbos Dika Shabbos. So we have to sort of create some kind of format to make sure that people who aren't working anyway will feel that today is Shabbos. So how do we do that? We have to just figure out a way to make it different today. So they said, okay, we don't want you to move certain things. And that's a way to make Shabbos different. I could do The same thing I do today, I did yesterday, I just rested and did nothing, but today I have to be careful with what I carry. Those are basically the main reasons for muktzah. You're probably thinking in your mind, wait a second, the main reason for muktzah is that you might... I just said a bunch of reasons. None of them were things that you ever thought of. You never thought of muktzah being a precautionary that you don't do hotza'ah outside an Erev. You never thought of not carrying because you want it to be recognizable to the leisure class that today's different. You never thought that today that we're not going to move muktzah things because we want Shabbos to just be different and to have a day of menucha. What did you always think muktzah was because of? You might come to use it. Of course. And that's correct. The Rambam says there's a different reason, and we're going to see why it's a different reason as we go over the next few weeks. There's a separate area of halacha called you might come to use it. It's not really the halachas of muktzah. We like calling it muktzah. We're going to see the proper name for it in a few minutes. But of course, I can't move my pen because I might write. I can't use my crocheting needles because I might crochet. And we'll get into the details about that. Those are the reasons for muktzah. And we're finished with the first part of the introduction. The second part of the introduction is, what does the word muktzah mean? A literal translation, a dictionary translation for the word muktzah is? Anyone venture a guess? Okay, let's start like this. How do you say apple in Hebrew? Tapuach. Okay, what's a chalon? What's a kisei? What's a ner? What's muktzah? Do we have any FFBs here? Nobody. What? I can't hear you. Yes, yes, it is connected to the word katzeh, which means the edge, the border, the edge, yes. It is related to that. That's got very, yeah, that's the shoresh. What? Cut off from the word kates, which is if you're cut off, you're at the edge. That's also probably a similar, same root. Yes, that's going to be the shoresh. No one here knows what the word muktzah is. Bikur cholim, we started last time. We said that we didn't know what bikur cholim meant. That was good. Bikur cholim didn't mean to visit sick. It means to inspect the sick. That was the last series. What? Excellent. The opposite of designated. Designated away from me. The word muktzah means separated from me. The word muktzah means I put it aside. It's designated not to be for us. It's designated for not my use, for me not to use. That's the word muktzah means. And there are some other halachas in some other areas in Hilchos Karbanos where we talk about an animal that was set aside not to be used, whatever the context there is. That's what the word muktzah is. Muktzah is I have in my mind, not consciously, it could be subconscious, we have in our minds, or we ought to have in our minds, that this item is out of our designation of use for Shabbos. It's a completely mental kind of thing. It has nothing to do with, let's leave it at that. Muktzah means I don't plan on using this on Shabbos. Or it's something that by definition is something that it's not the kind of thing that we would use on Shabbos. That's what the word muktzah means. Based on that, who could tell me what the antonym of the word muktzah is? And from its antonym, you will understand more clearly what muktzah itself is. Mukdash, I hear that. That's also close. What do you want to say? Mukdash. Not a bad guess. The opposite of muktzah is mukhan. Muktzah is designated not for use. Mukhan means readily available for use. It can be used. It can be used because my mind is on it to use it. That's something that is mukhan, prepared, available for my use. That's the second part of our introduction. The final part of our introduction is to talk about an important word that's going to come up time and time again. And to try to give it a definition, which we are not really going to give a definition, but we still have to familiarize ourselves with that word. The word is a kli. Chaf lamed yud. What is a kli? A vessel. Other people, you say a... starts with a U. Utensil. A thing. So we have to try to define the word kli, not because we are talking about klis right now, but it's going to come up later because we're going to have to see if something is a kli or is not a kli, so you have to just get a working definition. So there's a wonderful book. I don't have it here. There's a wonderful book with I have the old edition with the red cover. I think it's read by Bodner. I don't remember. I don't think it's the... I'm not talking about the... I wasn't using the art school book. There's a different book that has a lot of... Shilas that were presented to Ramosha Feinstein in the back of the book, which clarify a lot of intricacies of Hilchas Mukta. And I think it was by Bodner, so he says in the footnotes that he asked Shlomo Zalman or Bach Zatzal, how do you define the word Kli? And Shlomo Zalman told him that in your book you should not define the word Kli. Because the word Kli, based on different areas of Halacha, the word Kli might have a different definition, because for some areas of halacha we need a kli that has a certain identity. For a different area of halacha we need a kli that has a different kind of identity. But nevertheless, for our purposes, I made up a definition. A kli, for our purposes, is an object with a defined use. Any object with a defined use. Could you just give me an example of something that is a kli? A spoon is a kli. What else is a kli? A computer is definitely a kli. What else could be a kli? A pen could be a kli. What else could be a kli? A coat could be a kli. Could you tell me a thing or two that is not a kli? It is not an object with a defined use.
A stick?
A stick, perfect. It is exactly what I was looking for. A stick, a rock, a leaf. Those are all things that do not have defined uses, and those will not be considered kalim. A broken piece of furniture, a broken toy, a broken tool. Another example of something that's not a kli will be a peel of an orange. I mean, an orange isn't a kli, but we'll talk about oranges later. Now, I figured for this year we could do something a little different that we haven't done any other year. And I'm going to give out a handout. I purposely made it colorful. Anyone familiar with this book? Okay, the 39 Avas Malachas book. We all love picture books, don't we? Thank you, Rabbi Parchit, for your beautiful illustrated book. I made very few copies for each person, but only have one or two pages, because I don't want to violate any copyright rights. And we'll use them because I think it will save us a lot of confusion. And this way, I don't have to have a blackboard, I don't have to have a chart, you don't have to wait 3 weeks to find out all the different parts of Mukta. It's all in front of you. And the goal for the next few weeks that we have here are to basically go through these categories of Mukta that you're going to see in this little Mukta building. And we might get to all of them, we might not get to all of them. We'll get to at least the majority of them. And then we have another page for another shir, when you're allowed to, different ways that you can move mukta. That will be later on. First we're going to define mukta, that's going to be now. And later on in the series, let's say in two or three shiurim, we're going to talk about what are situations where you can move mukta. So let's start with the bottom left. The bottom left, we have a kli shemlach tel iser. We defined what a kli is. A kli whose purpose is to do prohibited acts for Shabbos. What's an example? A tool, an instrument like a guitar, like a drum, a paint can, tefillin that we won't talk about right now. But before we get into this, about a kli that's used for iser, like a pen, a flashlight, and things like that, let's talk about something that we never really thought about in terms of Hilchas Mukta. Let's talk about something that is called, before we start the halacha, the rules of muktzah, let's talk about what's not muktzah. Let's start on a happy foot. A kli shemalachto leheter. A kli whose purpose is for permitted usage. What's a thing that I could use on Shabbos? What's an instrument that I could use on Shabbos? A spoon. What else? A knife. Same family. What? A coat. Huh? A chair. Furniture. Clothing. Sfarim. Correct. Not just sfarim, but books. That's correct. Not like I said. We'll talk about that in 3 minutes. Oranges. We'll get to the peels a different time. Oranges. Actually, you know what? Oranges might, food might not be considered a kli, but that's a technical detail. What? Oh, but that's not true, actually. Once you peel it, the peel is actually going to be muktzah. So that, but that we're not going to talk about yet. That will be a little bit later. Let's talk about a kli shemalachta leheter. A kli that's used for permitted purposes. Clothing, furniture, toys. What about, let me ask you, toys are permitted to be moved on Shabbos. What about a toy noisemaker? For example, my son has a toy shofar, which is basically a whistle that they shaped like a shofar, and they charge 3 times as much. Okay, so is that muktzah? Now, you and I know that I'm not allowed to blow that shofar on Shabbos. That's like using an instrument. That's aser midrabbanan. But is that toy whistle, toy shofar, going to be muktzah? That could be one perspective. What about a rattle? Again, if the rattle, whenever you move it, always rattles, that's definitely a problem. But let's say it's a rattle that, when you shake it, it rattles. When you don't shake it, it's just there. Sorry? It is considered an instrument, believe it or not. It's considered a noisemaker. I don't know if it's an instrument, but it's a noisemaker. So it actually is a problem for me to do. But all toys, whether you're allowed to use them or not, an electric toy also, an electric toy that you're not allowed to turn on and flip the switch, those are not muktzah. Because a baby plays with them, a little kid plays with them. Even if you can't play with it the way it was designed to play with, any toy is not muktzah. It's a kli shemalachta leheter because it can be used on Shabbos permissibly, meaning by a 4-year-old. Another example. A watch. Okay, where's my watch? Here's my watch. So, is this watch permitted to be used on Shabbos? What? No, not to, that's not how I use my watch. I use my watch by looking at it and knowing what time it is. And how over time my drasha was. That's what I use it for. So it's a kli shemalachta leheter. A kli that its purpose, its use is for permitted purpose. What about, you remember when, before you got cool and didn't want a watch that had digital numbers, when you were still like in second grade, and you thought it was cool to have a digital watch with buttons on the side? So digital watch with buttons on the side, are those muktzah? They are not muktzah. They are kelim shemalachtam leheter. If you're going to press buttons, don't. If you know you think you will, then cover up the buttons that don't wear the watch. But if you're a normal person, you could have such a watch on your wrist. So, these are all examples of kelim shemalachtam leheter. Now, I'm going to read to you the Shulchan Aruch, which is going to seem ever so obvious, until we get to the end of the sentence. Okay? Shulchan Aruch in Hilchas Shabbos, all of Hilchas Muktzah is just so we know for our notes, Orach Chaim, Simen Shin Ches, Simen 308. Let me read to you a line, and the beginning will be obvious. Kli shemalachta leheter. You have a kli that's purpose is for permitted purposes, right? Like an eating utensil, a shirt, linen, furniture. Mutter letaltalo. You can handle it. You can move it. .. You can move it for the things that you need. Aval, here's the catch, and this is the big chumrah I was telling you about at the beginning of this year. The chumrah of the day is the following.
Aval shelo litzorech klal osur litaltala. If you have a chair and you want to move it for no reason, it is mukta. A chair is mukta? Rabbi Orlin, are you off your rocker? Well, I can't use my rocker if I just want to rock it for no reason. So if I'm talking to you and I want to sit down, so I can move the chair and I could sit down, right? But if I'm talking to you and I want to stand and I'm just moving the chair around because I don't know why.
That
was an iser of mukta. What?
Is that no reason? Because some people need to touch things.
Okay, then we're going to get to the Aruch HaShulchan in a few minutes, and then we'll talk about what happens if you have this, like, you're one of those, you know, people who just need to, like, always be, you know, flicking something, or, you know, that we'll talk about soon. But what is important to realize is that even things that are not mukta are mukta. Every item in the world, we'll see a few exceptions, practically every item in our house can be mukta, even if it's not mukta. Because mukta means you're allowed to use things on Shabbos when you need them. If you don't need something, then we shouldn't be using it. So let's think of a good example. A chair is a good example. My watch. If I want to know what time it is, I could look at what time it is. If I don't want to know what time it is, well, if it's on my wrist, that's a different story. But if it's not on my wrist, I just want to sort of, I don't know, move it around for no reason, that is actually not okay. So everything can be mukta if there's no reason to move it. Anything that there's a reason for you doing it is okay. There's no strict definition. It's not like you have to save an old lady who's about to get hit by a car on her way to shul in order to find as a valid use. Anything that there's a reason why you're using it constitutes a use. You just have to, it has to be some tzorech, some need. Some doesn't have to be need as opposed to want. No, we're not making that distinction. Anything that you want or that you need, that is permitted to use that item. If that box is right there in front of you, you see that tissue box? That tissue box is allowed to be used on Shabbos, right? You're allowed to blow your nose on Shabbos. Even after today's shir, you could blow your nose on Shabbos. That tissue box is there for kli, shemalach to leheter. Its use is for permitted purposes. If you just want to, I don't know, push the box down the table, not because the guy down the table or the girl down the table has to blow her nose, just because you want to push it down the table, that is mukta. That is asr betiltol. Okay? Is it a chumrah? No, it's the Shulchan Aruch. What? Playing a game is certainly a tzorech yontif, if you're having a good time. That's certainly fine. Again, we have a very broad definition of what is something that you need to do. Anything that you want or need to do, anything. As long as it's something that you have intention or thought of consciously doing, that's fine. If you're doing it for no reason at all, that's the only time that all items are out of bounds. All items, except the following. The Shulchan Aruch continues after it says, "Shelo litzorech klal asur l'taltala." However, kitvei hakodesh, svarim, ve'ochlim, and foods, mutar l'taltalam, they can be handled. Afilu shelo litzorech klal. Even if there's absolutely no purpose, if you want to take your chicken drumstick and just, you know, sort of tap it along. Why? For nothing other than you like tapping. So that's fine, because it's food. If you want to take your chumash, your siddur, and just sort of throw it from hand to hand and hold it and move it around for no obvious reason, that's also okay, because it's a sefer. Actually, the Mishnah Berurah says that Kitzvei HaKodesh doesn't just mean Jewish svar. It means any book that you're allowed to read on Shabbos. What are books that you're allowed to read on Shabbos? That will be a different shir, maybe. But chances are most of you read things that are allowed to read on Shabbos. Bina magazine is permitted to read on Shabbos. Okay? Not taking that away from you. Other things that you're definitely allowed to use, even if there's no need at all, is... Actually, there's machlokas about this, but I'll tell you, so just to be aware. Anything that's on the dining room table. Plates, cups, bowls, knives, spoons, forks, all those things that are on a dining room table, many shittos say that you can,
not candlesticks. No. I'm talking about eating utensils. Eating utensils, which are all permitted to be used, you can move them whether there's a tzorach or not a tzorach. Even if there's no reason why you want to just move this plate around, move this fork around, move this knife around, you can. Well, for no tzorach at all. Just like books, just like foods, some people also say clothing or jewelry, which is the same thing as clothing. Also, you could just sort of rummage through your clothing for no reason, move clothing around for no reason. So let's sort of review that quickly. Everything in the world is muktzah if you're using it for no reason. What is not muktzah, and you can move it even for no reason? Books, food, clothing, and items on the dining room table. Now, items on the dining room table are machlokas, actually. And that's actually where it comes most into play. Most of the time that you move things for no reason are because you're sitting at the table with guests or with friends, and you're sort of not completely engaged in the conversation, so you're taking the spoon and sort of just, you know, drumming on the table. That's where this halacha comes up most of the time. So that's a machlokas. A key. Hold on 1 second. We'll get there in a minute. A key. A key is a classic example of a kli shemelachto laheter. I use a key to open my front door, to open my downstairs, my upstairs. Even a key that I use to open up my car doors is not muktzah. If I have a key that opens up the car doors, going into your car is not an isser. Of course, assuming there are no lights on, you might not be able to have the lights go on, but unlocking your car is permitted on Shabbos. Again, not talking about an ignition key, talking about a key that you use to get into the car. If those cars, most cars nowadays have one key for everything. In the olden days, there was a door key and an ignition key. Ignition key is a key that you use for isser, that's muktzah. The door key is a key that you use for opening a door, that's mutter. So can I take a key and tap it on the table? If we assume, again, if you do it because you need it for you, because you're nervous and it helps you relax, that might be a need that we'll talk about in a minute. But if you just happen to be tapping your key on the table, it's a klisha melachta laheter, which is prohibited to use for no reason at all, to move around for no reason at all. Oh, what about those things that you're permitted to use even shelo letzorech klal, even without any need whatsoever? Those are only dining room utensils, or clothing, or books, or food items. A key is not one of those. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, if you have a key, you're holding your keys, and you want to do what I'm doing, not just because you're nervous and therefore it helps you relax, because whoever you're with is very unpleasant to speak to, or to give shir to, or to whatever else.
Does that ever happen? Does that ever actually happen? The only reason that anyone would ever do something, even unconsciously, is because we feel the need.
Okay, so you're asking a great question. So you want to know what the Aruch HaShulchan says, right? Is that what your question is? So Aruch HaShulchan asked, well, I don't remember your name. Yehudis is asking the question that the Aruch HaShulchan asked. The Aruch HaShulchan says, I don't understand. Can I read the words, exactly what you just asked? Eino muvan, this is not understandable. Kevan shemetaltalan, since you're moving them, vadai, certainly, yesh lo eza kavana bazeh, certainly you have a reason behind it. If you're moving it, there's a reason for it, right? If you're moving something for no reason, so you wouldn't be moving it. If you're moving it, there must be a reason. So he actually, the Aruch HaShulchan has a kula that you were mentioning. What were you? What, you're an OT. So what was the proper OT word?
Well, it's a sensory need.
A sensory need. What? Can give me something technical so I could feel. Tactile. Okay, personally, that's great. A person who is afflicted with a tactile. Well, that sensation disorder, integration or sensory integration disorder, sensory processing disorder, and needs to have their body moving, their hands flitting things, and they needed to relax, to be calm, to not be anxious, to enjoy themselves, to tap whatever reason, says the Aruch HaShulchan, that will be permitted. That itself is an enjoyment. So we're going to have to figure out where's that case that you're doing it for no reason at all. I don't know. But when you find it and you notice that you're moving something for no reason, whatever you're touching, you could catch yourself and say, oh, that was Rabbi Orlean's Chumrah of the week. I can't move this for no reason. If it makes me happy, that's, I could use it. But if it's not making me happy, it's not because I have a sensory integration need, then I should not use it. Of course, if it's a book, I can. If it's food, I can. My drumstick, I could drum my drumstick as much as I want. Of course, if it's book, food, clothing, and possibly utensils on the table might also be okay. Okay, that was the Chumrah of the week. Questions?
Okay, so you said you can move your clothing.
You can move your clothing even for no reason whatsoever.
So if I want to clean my room?
You can clean your room on Shabbos, yes. So if you fold things on things that have proper creases, that's a different discussion. Sweaters probably don't have proper creases, they're probably fine. You know, most skirts, if you're hanging up a skirt, it's certainly fine. If you have like a, you know, a like a linen kind of blouse that's folded, you know, when you get it back from the cleaners, it's like folded on lines, and you want to fold it on those lines, that's a different halachic issue, which we're not going to talk about now. That could be a question. Yes? Oh, yes. It depends how high the pile on your chair in your room is. But I don't want to embarrass anybody here. yes, there could be a border issue. If you have a pile of clothes, you know, piled high, and right now you want to do socks. So you're going to get the socks and take them out from what you want, and you don't really need the socks separated now. You don't need them until some other time. So even though you're doing it with your hands and you're doing it directly, and you're doing what you want, but you're not doing it for right now, so that would be a problem with it. So yeah, if you have a pile of clothing, that could be an issue. But that's just a set. That's a borer halacha, not a mukta halacha. Any other questions on the Chumrah of the week? So now, you've come out of today's shir, and they ask you, what did you learn tonight? You say, I learned that absolutely everything in the world, with four exceptions, can be mukta. What are the four exceptions? Svarim, books, food, clothing, jewelry and clothing together, and our people. Oh, let's talk about animals. Are animals able to be moved? Well, we're not up to that. That's for another night. We will talk about animals, and this is very important for those who have pets. Are animals mukta? Are they a kli? We'll talk about animals some other night. Okay, let's talk about, again, kelim that can be moved for a reason. I have a large couch in my living room. The couch weighs about 418 pounds. I had seven strong strapping men, each who could bench press 250 pounds with their left hand, carry this couch into my living room. And Shabbos, after I ate a little bit, and I drank a little bit, perhaps a little bit too much, I decided that I don't like the couch where it is. And I want to move it to the other side of the room. All 418 pounds of couch. It's a big one. You know, one of those 13-foot long couches? Can I move that on Shabbos?
No.
Go at it. The halacha is, I'll tell you what the Shulchan Aruch says. Kol kli, afilu gadol v'kaved harbei. Any utensil, even if it's gigantic or incredibly heavy, it does not change its status from whatever kli it is. So if you have a kli that is melachta leheter, that is like furniture. Furniture is something that you're allowed to use. No Shabbos prohibition involved in tables and chairs and couches. You can move in bookcases. You can move it on Shabbos. It's true, if you're going to do it all day and you'll be like a mover, then that just takes away the spirit of Shabbos, and we saw that was one of the reasons that the Rambam said maybe Chazal instituted the whole mukta, you know, creation anyway. But just because you want to move a couch from here to there, as heavy as it is and as big as it is, mutter, gummer, it is permitted. Sure. Yeah. Let's say, for example, you have a chair, right? So I'm not supposed to move the chair if I don't have a reason. But let's say I want to get to the kugel. And it's going to look weird if everyone sees me going like that. It's just not polite. So I couldn't move the chair out of my way.
I'm going to take the kugel.
So that's the reason. Again, we're very, very liberal in defining what's a need. Anything that you want to do, you want to use an item for any use that you could think of, that's appropriate. If there's no use, that's the question. I think it's a... I mean, there are. We just have to figure out how to come up with the cases. But again, for somebody who's not nervous, somebody who doesn't need it for for releasing tension specifically, they shouldn't just be touching things. What does that do to me? That makes me so aware of Hilchos Shabbos all day long. Until now, I was sort of aware of Shabbos. Now I realize I can't touch anything if there's no need. I just became a very Shabbos-aware person very quickly because of this Rabbi Orlean's Chumra, but it's a line of the Shulchan Aruch. Okay? Let us conclude Hilchos Kli Shemlach Tola Heter. We're finished talking about things that are mutter to use on Shabbos. Now let's get to what we classically call Muktzah, because no one really calls the thing that like a chair or a book Muktzah. A book never, but a chair or a key Muktzah. Let's talk about Kli Shemlach Tola Isser. So Kli Shemlach Tola Isser is actually a misnomer. We call it Muktzah, but it's not Muktzah. What's an example, and then you'll see why it's not really... We'll get there in a moment. A hammer is a classical example for a Kli Shemalach Tola Isser. A hammer is primarily used for purposes of Isser on Shabbos, a prohibition on Shabbos. You can't bang in nails, and therefore, I'm not allowed to move it. Can I touch a hammer? Of course. We'll get there in a moment. So what's an example? Let's just give a list of Kelim Shemalach Tola Isser, things that are usher to use. A hammer, a pen, a scissors lets you have an ignition key to your car, right? Again, nowadays we have keys that are both ignition and door. We'll have to talk about that. That's a little more complicated. We'll talk about that in about 2 minutes. But if it's just an ignition key, that's a kli that you use for prohibited purposes. So the ignition kli will be kli shemalachto le'isser. A computer that we're going to talk about not tonight. Okay, that's going to be more complicated. Let's talk about something that a lot of people don't know, and if you do, great. A pot. What do you usually do with a pot? Cook. Are you allowed to cook on Shabbos? No. So therefore, a pot is considered kli shemalach tola isser. A pot is muktzah. What about a tea kettle that's sitting on your stovetop? A tea kettle. What do you do with a tea kettle? You boil hot water in it. Are you allowed to boil things on Shabbos? No. A tea kettle is muktzah. Where could it be moved? Okay, we'll talk about that in a few minutes. Let's talk about a pot. Let's say I have a pot that is empty, and it's just sort of sitting here. And why should it be sitting here? It should be in the pot. It should be down on the bottom the cabinet. Thank you. So I can't move it. It's muktzah. What happens if it's a pot with quarter of a pot of cholent or noodles or vegetables in it? Is it muktzah? Of course not. Because there, you're not carrying a pot, you're carrying noodles. It happens to be that the utensil that keeps the noodles together is a pot. What do you have in front of you? You have water. Thank you. You don't have a water bottle, you have water. How do you hold your water? What's in front of you? Jesse, what do you have in front of you? Jelly beans. You don't have a bowl. You have jelly beans. How are the jelly beans held together? With a bowl. So if I have a pot that has, let's say, some broccoli on the bottom of it, I don't have a pot, I have broccoli. How is the broccoli being held together so that it doesn't splatter all over the place? With a pot. What I'm saying in halachic terminology is that the pot, the container, is batel, is subservient to the ikur, which is the main thing which is inside of it, that which it's holding. The broccoli is the ikur. Therefore, the pot will lose its identity in the face of the broccoli that it is carrying. Theoretically, that pot is muktzah right now. We'll get there in a minute or two, but theoretically, an empty pot is objectively muktzah. What are scenarios that you can move it around? We'll get there in a minute. Yes? Excellent question. If it's a dirty pot that doesn't have much food, like any real food in it, it has just the remnants of like some, those little tiny green dots, that's muktzah. If there are two pieces of broccoli on the bottom, it's not matzah because they're edible pieces of broccoli. Yeah. So we're going to talk about that in a minute. When can you move such things? Let's talk about not a pot but a casserole dish. Because here's things are going to change a little bit. How do I define, what do I do with a casserole dish? What? I'm a guy, I don't know what these things are. I just read what the book said casserole dish. I don't even know what a casserole dish looks like. I'll just tell you what, I looked in the book, page 273, it says casserole dish. I'll just tell you what it says there. What's a casserole dish? What do you do with it? You bake. And you serve. Oh, so it has two uses. Are you allowed to serve food on Shabbos?
Yes.
You are. Are you allowed to bake on Shabbos? You're not. So who wins?
The one serving.
Why? You have to eat on Shabbos. This is desperate. Pikuach nefesh. I agree with you. It might not be the right answer, but I agree with you. Actually, it's the wrong answer. What? No, I'm talking about an empty casserole dish. I want to define the purpose of a casserole dish. Is a casserole dish, by definition, it is something that is used for two purposes. A purpose of iser for baking and a purpose of heter for serving. You're a big machmir. I would have said that how many times, let's say I have a kugel. How many times do you bake with it for any given kugel in the casserole dish? Once, right? How many times? No, a proper one. A plastic, a glass Pyrex, Corningware. I know my casserole dishes. So I have my Corningware or Pyrex casserole dish. How many times do I bake the broccoli kugel inside of it?
Once.
How many times do I serve with it? As many times as you're willing to eat the leftovers. Right?
Sure.
And you keep it your... And you keep it in the fridge with it. So that means, in terms of the numbers of uses of this casserole dish, there's one use shall iser for any given use, and there are 3, 4, 5 uses of heter. So how will I define this casserole dish? As a kli shemlachto, a kli that's purpose is for? We'll follow the majority. Heter. And therefore, an empty casserole dish is not muktza. An empty pot is muktza. Because a pot, you primarily don't serve in a pot. If you serve quite often, the foods, you know, pot, let's say perhaps a crock pot. Perhaps one could argue that a crock pot, that you actually, if it depends how you do it in your house. If you take the crock pot from the, you know, the inner crock pot, from the outer crock pot, you put it on the dining room table because you want to keep it really hot. I happen to like my chon very, very, very hot. So if I serve it on the dining table, and everyone serve, we have a serving spoon, and everyone takes it from the crock pot itself. I don't put it in a serving dish. From the crock pot itself onto my plate. So that crock pot is being used, A, for cooking, and B, for serving. So in such a case, the crock pot will not be muktzah when it's empty. As long as there's food in there, of course I'm carrying it, because I'm carrying the sholent. But when it's empty, if I primarily use this item, this pot, for uses of heter, like serving, like storing in the refrigerator, then it is defined as a kli that is mutter. If I primarily use it for iser, it is defined as something that is usser. So, let's say I have poultry shears, and my son happens to be, enjoys arts and crafts, and for whatever reason, we don't have a pair of scissors in the house. So, whenever he needs to cut something, he goes to the Fleischika poultry shears, and he takes the poultry shears, and he cuts his project. So, is that poultry shears mukta, or not? Well, poultry shears should be mukta. You're cutting food. There's nothing wrong with that. That was not a good example. I'm sorry. What's an example of something that we use for Isser and Heter? And we have to define, other than a pot. Who could tell me? Who could think of something? Oh yeah, good. Yeah, okay. I'm not that old yet. Good. So back to the poultry shears. So my son used it, and that's he used it for prohibited purposes for arts and crafts to cut projects. The poultry shears also are used for cutting poultry. Some people use it for. So now is it going to be, is that a kli shemlachta leheter or leiser? Am I allowed to move it on Shabbos if there's need? Or am I not allowed to move it on Shabbos? Exactly. It depends how often I use it for what. If I use it only on Thursday night when I have to prepare the chicken, and he uses it 3 times a week to cut his arts and crafts, that is mukta. That's a kli shemlachta leiser. I cannot use that poultry shears. I can't move the poultry shears around. Except whatever cases we'll talk about in a minute. But in general, that would be a mukta. Yes? I'm sorry? You can use poultry shears on raw food. You're saying, I do. It happens to be. If you go to the takeout place on Erev Shabbos, they will cut the roast chicken with poultry shears. But you're saying, I use it when I prepare my raw food, and raw food is... You're saying I'm not using it to cook, I'm using it to cut it so I could wash it. I don't think that's an isser in itself. You're right, cooking the raw food itself might even be mukta. We won't get into that till later. But I don't think my cutting of raw chicken is itself not prohibited. It's not an isser to cut raw chicken. To cook raw chicken it is, but cutting raw chicken is not. So I don't think that would itself be an isser. Yeah. I hear that. That's a valid argument. I hear what you're saying. Okay, so maybe it's not a good example. I'm not sure if that's going to... I mean, if I have poultry shears that are... You know, I didn't pay $12 for a 4-year-old scissors. If I wanted a scissors for a 4-year-old, I would pay $1.99. I paid $12 in Bed Bath & Beyond to get these poultry shears. Plus tax. So $13.50 for these poultry shears. So they're poultry shears. And I make sure it was a good brand name. KitchenAid, right? KitchenAid. Good brand name. Why? Only because I want to cut poultry. It happens to be my son used it 3 times the amount of usages that I use it. So you're arguing, so forget about raw numbers. It is designed to be... I hear what you're saying. I'm not sure about that. That's a good point. Okay, so if over the next week anyone thinks of a good example of something that we use for both heter and iser, you could bring it up to me. Let's talk about the two main caveats when it comes to these kinds of items. So again, we're talking about an item that the main thing that you do with it is usur. So therefore, the rabbi said, don't move it around because you might come to violate that isur. Don't move a pot because you might come to cook. Don't move a pen because you might come to write. Don't move a crocheting needle because you might come to crochet. Don't handle a flashlight because you might turn on the light. When can you move it? So there are two exceptions, so I'm sure some of you are familiar with. We'll talk a little bit more deeply that you might have been familiar with in a moment. One is Litzarech Mekomo. If I have, let's say, this, what's here on the table? Here, there's a pen, I'm sorry, let's talk about this pen. There's a pen here on the table. And I want to sit over here, for whatever reason, I want to sit over here and put my book down, my sefer down, my plate down, but there's a pen in the way. So Litzarech Mekomo, for its purpose, for using that area, I can move your pen away. That's the first heter for a kli shemlachta l'iser. What? Correct, without a shinui. I could lift up the pen with my bare hands and lift it up, not push it off, not use my elbow, not blow it away. I could actually lift it up and... It's l'chatchila. It's not even like...
And walk with it, yes.
In fact, once you're walking with it, the Shulchan Aruch, in this halacha right here, it tells us a big yesod in Hilchos Mukta, in this topic about what we're talking about, a kli shemlachta l'iser, that you're moving because you need the place. Once it's in your hand, you're allowed to take it with your hand, ulahanicho, and place it be'ezeh makom sheyirtzeh. And that's an important, again, there's a side point for what we're talking about, but there's a very important kula. Whenever you happen to have mukta in your hand, for whatever reason, however it got there, either by mistake it got there, or it got there because you were permitted to lift it up, because it was in your way, once it's in your hand, let's say you're rummaging through your pockets, and there's a $20, oh my gosh, there's a $20 bill on Shabbos. What's our natural instinct? Drop it. Terrible! It's in your hand already. Once it's in your hand, go upstairs, go to your bedroom, find a nice place where it won't get lost, take your sock drawer, open up your sock drawer, drop it inside.
What if you found it in your pocket and you touch it?
That's a different. That we'll get to in a few weeks. No, but that's a different concept. That's a different issue. If you're going to move something, and it might cause the issue to happen. I don't think so. Let's say there's a remote control on the couch. A remote control on the couch, right? You have a remote control. Everyone here has a remote control for their stereo, right? Right? We all have remote controls for our stereos, and it's on the couch, and I want to sit down. And it's not comfortable having a remote control stick in my ribs. So, remote control is a kli, shemalachto le'isr, because it's usr to, whatever, to turn on your stereo on Shabbos. So it's a kli shemalachto le'isr. You want to move it tzarech mekomo. So, plenty of people move their remote controls without pressing buttons.
But so, it's the whole idea of the
yeah, that's why you can't move it for no reason. But for specifically for the reason of that you need its place, there Chazal permitted you to move it because you're focusing not on the remote control, you're focusing on the couch. You made a mistake. You made a mistake, just like you. So that's a different. That would be a different. If you know if there's a chance that you're going to violate the Isser by moving it, that's a different question. That's nothing to do with Hilchas Mukta. That will be. Are you allowed to involve yourself in an action if there's a 10% chance that you might do an Isser? That's a different area of Hilchas Shabbos called Davar She'eino Miskaven, related to Psik Reisha. We're not going to talk about that. That's not a Mukta question. That's where, can I do anything when there's a 10% chance that I'm going to? Can I drag a bench in my backyard? If there's a 10% chance that it's going to dig a little ditch in the dirt. What? That's nothing to do with mukta. That was a question of digging when you're not sure if it will dig. Or whatever other specific turning on lights if you're not sure it will really turn on or not. That's not a halacha of mukta. Okay, let's just finish off with the other situation that is a famous situation. That you're allowed to move a kli shemalachto le'isr. A classical scenario that you might have heard is you have a hammer and you have a coconut. You're not allowed to bang nails in with your hammer, but you are allowed to. Wow, that was so very good of you. Yes, you're allowed to break your coconut with a hammer. Why? Because that's using the hammer not for its regular use, but litzorach gufo. Litzorach gufo means using the body of the hammer not for its classical use, not for its designated use. And that, even though the hammer is mukta, the Shulchan Aruch says clearly, you're allowed to crack nuts, coconuts, and anything else with your hammer. Let me finish with a story. The story goes like this. I gave a shiur a few years ago in Reuben Shul. And it was like a 5-10 minute shiur. And the shiur was about our tefillin mukta. And I opened up the shiur saying, and I hope I don't get stoned here, you'll see why. I opened up shiur saying, remember, Reuben Shul is part of Yeshiva University, the men's part of it. It's not part of Stern College, it's part of, you know, uptown. And I said, I'm going to talk about a halacha that applies to everybody here. And there are about 30 guys sitting in front of me. I'm going to talk about moving tefillin on Shabbos. And after the shiur was over, a young man comes over to me and says, my kala, who is sitting in the Ezes Nashim, in the back, behind the mechitza, while you were speaking, was very offended. I said, I didn't talk about anything philosophical. What are you offended? I just gave a shiur on Hilchas Mukta. What could be offensive about Hilchas Mukta? He said, because you opened your shiur saying you're going to talk about a halacha that applies to everybody. And she's part of everybody. And she doesn't wear a tefillin. So I apologized for offending his kala. And then I told him that she shouldn't feel offended because the halachas of tefillin being mukta have nothing to do with men or women. Let's say your father, your brother, left his tefillin on the bookshelf. And what's behind that bookshelf? What's behind your tefillin? The book that you've been waiting to read, you've been waiting for Shabbos to come so you can read it. Or your chumash, your tehillim, and you want to get to it. But there's a tefillin in your way. Whether you're a man, or you're a woman, let's assume tefillin are mukta, for whatever reason. whatever reason. Maybe it's also to put on tefillin on Shabbos, so it's just like I can't turn on a flashlight on Shabbos, I can't crochet a sweater on Shabbos, I can't cook with my pot on Shabbos, I'm not allowed to, you know, put on tefillin on Shabbos. So let's say it's also like a klisha malach to l'iser. Could I move it to get to the book behind it? The answer is, of course you can. Why? Because you need it for its place. You can't, it's in your way. It's obstructing you. It's in your way. And therefore, I exonerated myself, and I was not considered offensive. Baruch Hashem, I would never want to be offensive, God forbid, to anybody. And therefore, it is a halacha that is applicable to all everybody, that we all know that you can move anything that's mukta because its primary use is iser, if you need either its location or if you need its, you want to use it for some other use. Let's finish with a very common situation.
So why would you need to use a shinoi?
We're not up to shinoi yet. Because there are other kinds of mukta. There are a lot of other kinds of mukta. A lot of other things in the world besides what we talked about.
But with this?
With these, you don't need to use a shinoi unless you want to move it. We'll talk about more next time. I just want to finish with one halacha, and then people could ask me, actually I don't know if I'll have time today for questions, but one final halacha. You have a hammer on the table, and you're having guests for lunch. And your mother says, before they come, quickly get it off, it's not Shabbos stick. So, let's say you're not eating on that table. They're going to come into your living room and sit on the couches and drink tea on the coffee table. They're just going to walk through the dining room and see the hammer, the non-Shabbos stick, a hammer on the dining room table. So do you need the place? Do I need that location on the dining room table? Am I sitting on that part of the couch? No, it's just the fact that it's here bothers me. It's not that I need that place. This is very common. Especially on short Fridays, you don't have enough time to clean up, and you have something that doesn't look Shabbos-tick. So there, the halacha is, Rav Moshe says something very interesting. It's not Shabbos-tick to have a hammer on the table. It's very Shabbos-tick to have the hammer on the table. Because why is the hammer on the table? Because you can't move it, because it's mukta. So how can you say it's not Shabbos-tick? The only reason why it's there is because it's Shabbos. It's a very Shabbos-tick thing to have a hammer on the table on Shabbos, because you leave it there because you can't move it. So halach l'maisa, that's also a little bit of a chumrah, and that's actually a hard chumrah. Sometime like that would be a good, that kind of situation would be a good example where you'd want to move it b'shinui. That would be a good case, atara, where if you wanted to move it, you can't move it because it's not really obstructing your use of the dining room table. So there you'd move it with your elbow, with your teeth, some other way that we'll talk about in a few weeks. Thank you very much. And Be'ezus Hashem will continue with other fascinating halachas of Hilchas Muktzah next week.